Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
We're back again, as always, because calendar tells us it's time.
What do you do when you can't look at Twitter? This is what I ask you. Like, I keep, like, Twitter ends up being this thing where I de facto, like, oh, I've got a second. I'll take a look at Twitter. And then today, as we record this, I'm trying to avoid spoilers for the last episode of WandaVision. And I like glanced at it for a second, and even from that, I felt like, oh, did I just see a, was that a spoiler? Was that just somebody theorizing something? I don't know. And it's like, what do I, but like the muscle memory, right? Like I want to like click over to Twitter when I've got a second, well, when I'm not like actively doing something. I don't know what to do.
I check Slack and
I do that, but our friends on Slack stuff to read.
our friends on Slack tend to put things in threads. So
which is very nice. And that's great. But then I ran out of Slack to read and I was like, now what?
I don't know.
Yeah, I'll stare at this post-it note. Yeah.
Read a book.
Yeah.
We posted a lot of stuff this week on Six Colors. Yeah. It's a busy week. Good stuff. A little quiet week last week. It just, you know, it's the ebb and the flow and all of that. I wrote this thing yesterday about Strong Sync, which is from the Expand Drive people. And it's a new app and it's got some bugs. And, you know, but the idea is interesting, and I think I think if you want to use Strong Sync or Expand, you use Expand Drive. Like you're using a third party app to connect to other cloud services, like which is reasonable, right? That's like I use I'm gonna forget the name of it now. The backup app that uses other storage.
Arc
backup. Yeah. That's it. Right. And that's an example of like I'm using Arc to back up to other people's cloud storage. Right. Arc doesn't provide that.
Well, it's like a little glue between third parties.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, Expand Drive is like that and Strong Sync is going to be like that. But what and I'm sure it will, you know, they'll find a niche for it. But what I think is most interesting to me about it is that they are the first, they say, and I think they're right, but I don't know for sure, there might be somebody else out there, to use this new file provider API that Apple added in Big Sur. And the idea here is, the elevator pitch is, you know how you interact with iCloud Drive in the Finder, where there's like a little cloud with an arrow coming out of it, and you can like click on it to force a download, and you can, or if you double click on something, it will load it and then open it and all of that, and then you can click and right click on it and choose remove download, and basically it's giving you management of what gets cached locally and what's up in the cloud for a cloud service, and it's all for iCloud Drive. Boy, I hope this is a long elevator ride because I've expanded my elevator pitch.
I've got to get off now.
The elevator pitch is, you know how you use iCloud Drive? Well, File Provider API makes that available to anyone for their cloud service. That's the pitch.
I think it's an interesting idea because I mean, what this says to me is that Apple realized our attempts to just say, why use those other services? Just use iCloud Drive. We know that's not going to fly. We know
exactly.
People are going to keep using those other third-party services. And you know what? We should make make this as friendly as possible for that.
And I mean, please stop
that on
putting
iOS.
Kernel extensions in
yes,
our computers.
Exactly.
We're going to not let you do that for security reasons. So instead, they have, because you're probably saying, well, yeah, but I do that with Dropbox now. So what's new about this? The answer is this is blessed by Apple. And Apple wants everybody like Dropbox and Box and Microsoft for OneDrive. And Apple wants all of them to use this API so that there's a consistent interface for whatever file provider, whatever network cloud storage thing is behind it. That's what Apple wants everybody to use.
Right, right.
And that's the carrot. The stick is that all those kernel extensions are going to get turned right. off in a future macOS update. So you really need to kind of get with the program.
Yeah.
The issue is if Strong Sync is the first one, other than Apple, I guess, to use this, does it work? Will it work? Will it work to Dropbox's specifications? Will it work Microsoft's? I don't know.
I mean, that's the thing is, like, Dropbox for years was sort of the gold standard, right, for how stuff worked with file stuff built into the Finder. And iCloud Drive, while it has its advantages, most of all being, you know, sort of like we said, blessed by Apple, it's never been quite as good in my experience. It's been better It's gotten better, but it has some weird idiosyncrasies, like the fact that it's not really just a folder on your computer like Dropbox was. It's like a special location.
It is.
It's actually in the library.
And that's actually true of all of the stuff that StrongSync does is the same thing, right?
I assume that was the case. Yeah. And so But iCloud Drive has had some reliability issues where sometimes I can't be the only one who's sitting there waiting for like a, 100 kilobyte file and it's just spinning and you're like, what is the problem? This is 100 kilobytes.
That's actually the biggest problem with this and the barrier for StrongSync and anybody else to use this API is...
Will it be reliable?
What has Apple done? Is it going to be reliable? And what's the UI? Because the other real challenge is Apple likes to build these "it just works" interfaces, right. And sometimes it doesn't work. And that's I share with you my frustration with iCloud Drive is not that it works most of the time, but when it doesn't work, it fails silently.
Very frustrating.
You can't tell it fails silently. It doesn't tell you anything, and there's nothing to click to reset, to force, because they're like, no, it just works, but it doesn't work. But no, it just works. We didn't build it to not work, and that's the problem.
This is a big problem with a lot of iCloud, is that Apple has this expectation that everything is seamless and everything works, and it does not account for the possibility that sometimes, infrequent as it may be, those things go wrong. And we've seen that with all sorts of iCloud services, clipboard sharing. Sometimes it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
Why? Can you do anything about it? Nope. Just wait for it to work again. I've had this problem in a separate post I wrote this week. I talked about deleting message threads across devices. And I've seen this, again, repeatedly this entire week. And before that, I will delete a thread on a device. And it's like, hey, you're going to delete this thread, but you use messages in the cloud, so it's going to delete it everywhere. And I'm like, great, that's what I want. And I click delete, and it doesn't work. It has never worked for me. I still have to delete it separately off every single device. And it's like, even when you say like that you've got this warning situation, dire situation, if you delete this, it will be gone forever. No, it's still there. So, and what to do about that? I don't know. I could turn off message cloud syncing, right? Like, or I could turn off the clipboard sharing feature, if you can figure out, I think Handoff technically controls that, but you have to Google around to find that's the case. But for iCloud, I don't know. I've never found a good solution. Again, could I turn off iCloud entirely, iCloud Drive, and turn it back on again? I guess, and that might actually fix it, but what is going wrong that is the only option? If they can identify that, then they could make a button that's like the fix iCloud button without logging everything out and logging back in again.
Yeah, it's right. It's the expectation that you won't need help.
Yeah,
but that's not realistic. And
nobody's ever made a computer technology that never fails. consumer computer technology.
Yeah,
it's not a thing. You should never design your technology around the idea that it will never fail.
No, you need to provide some level of troubleshooting for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the, that is my complaint about iCloud Drive. And it was all, although I will say this for StrongSync, so I had the same problem I have had occasionally with iCloud Drive where I tried to load a file and it didn't load. And it was a small file. It was a web location file. So it's literally just a URL in Google Drive to a Google Doc. And once that was going, I couldn't do anything else with the file provider, right? I couldn't download anything else, and it was because it was stuck on that one. And I've seen that in iCloud Drive too.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Once it gets stuck on one, you can try other things, and you can try to undo it, and it just won't. It's stuck.
Yeah.
And this is bad, and this is why you need a thing that says reset or cancel or try again or whatever you need to do in that. You need to be able to process that. What I found with Expand Drive is because Expand Drive is a third-party app that is running that system instead of it being something built into macOS, is that I quit Expand Drive and it instantly relinquished all attempts to connect to that volume and said, I can't connect. And then I relaunched it and my other things worked. And it was a bug in Expand Drive, they said, that it's they have to make, because this is like, this is, I don't know if they're calling it a beta, but it's basically a beta. It's a brand new product. And they're like, oh yeah, the web location thing on Google Drive doesn't work. We're fixing that. I'm like, okay, that's fine. But it was interesting in the sense that it blocked everything. And then when I quit the app, it relinquished its, you know, queue of things it was failing at doing. And then when I relaunched it, I could then go back and download a Word file or whatever, and it worked fine again. And that's what's missing from iCloud Drive.
Right, you can't quit and relaunch.
Yeah, you can't say, you know, reset my iCloud Drive connection or something.
Maybe you can just restart your entire computer, but hey, that's time consuming and it's disruptive, right? Like, who wants to do that every time they can't load a spreadsheet? Like, that's back to like 1980s level.
Yeah, exactly. So. And it's so frustrating. So I love the idea that Apple is building this stuff in, because having intelligent kind of cloud-backed storage means that you can have lots of storage on the cloud and it syncs to all your other devices, but it's also not filling up your hard drive. And that's all good stuff. But
and none of this should take away from the fact that I would argue iCloud Drive has gotten much better in the last several years. I think I mentioned this a while back, but I've switched most of my personal, like basically stuff that doesn't need to get shared, but stuff that I want to keep amongst my devices. I moved all that to iCloud Drive. Basically, all I have left in Dropbox is folders I share with other people, or like including like file request stuff, because Dropbox doesn't, or iCloud Drive does shared folders, but I'm at the mercy of everybody else who doesn't yet use it. So I have that weird bifurcated approach. But I again, like with iCloud Drive, it works most of the time. But comparatively, Dropbox for me has been way more reliable in the long term. They don't seem to have that problem. Maybe it's because they're using a kernel extension. I don't know.
Well, that's probably it, is they've written their own software to meet their own needs. And there's a lot of good that comes from that. I think Apple's concern is there are also lots of security issues, and they're kind of hacking their software, and Apple doesn't like that. And there are a lot of users who are wary of even using Dropbox. And I think it's an interesting idea that if Dropbox is now using, at some point switches to using system APIs, if they'll feel better about using Dropbox on their Mac, because it doesn't, you know, it's not doing weird things.
Will just become less reliable, a la iCloud Drive.
Yeah, well,
which will also piss off a lot of people.
That's the negative side. Is this Apple trying to exert itself to basically control all the interface of cloud services so that they can't differentiate themselves from iCloud Drive? Because what if Dropbox wants to add another feature? Like if iCloud Drive or if File Provider API doesn't support a certain kind of concept, then they can't support it. And again, there are probably some nuances here where you can select it and choose like share, and it's going to go to the Dropbox app, and it's not using file provider in that instance. It's using its own secret stuff that it's got built up that will still be there. I don't know. It's fascinating because, like, on one level, I really would rather my cloud storage be consistent and be be like iCloud Drive in that way, but not with the downsides that we've described. So
because I like the, I mean, I have stuff like scattered across some different storage stuff, and I've installed the different, you know, at times I've had the Google Drive app installed in the one cloud or one cloud, one sync, one Microsoft, whatever, OneDrive. That's it. I've had those installed, and it's like, I don't need all those little icons, and they all work a little bit differently. And yeah, I agree with you. I'd rather see that standardized because, again, to this point, like, it's not going away. Apple's realized people rely on cloud storage. It is a fundamental aspect of our computing experience now. You better build it into the operating system, because if you don't, people will get annoyed and will use other stuff. I mean, they've done this on the, they did this, kind of blazed this trail on the iOS, iPadOS side with the Files app a couple of years ago, and with mixed results, but yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I wrote about that, which was nice. Let's see, what else? Oh, I put out my Markdown thing, which is basically that I feel frustrated by writing on my iPad because the apps aren't good enough. It's the simple version of it, or at least, and it is, some of the apps aren't good enough. Some of the apps are good, but they're not for me and I'm trying to misuse them, which I want to be clear on. Like, I tried to be clear on the, like, Drafts is a great example. Drafts is a great app and it does most of what I want. And the things that it doesn't do, I understand why it doesn't do them. I've talked to the people who make Drafts. I understand. I hope that one day they will do something that will allow me to fit it into my workflow exactly as I want. But, you know, it's not that their app isn't great for what it's intended. It's that I am trying to misuse it, just to be clear.
Right, right.
But still, it's one of those things that, I mean, and part of it, the problem is I've been using BBEdit for 20 years. And so I'm just used to using BBEdit and all the features that it has. And I don't want a BBEdit clone. Well, I mean, I would take BBEdit for iOS. I certainly would. But, like, I don't need a BBEdit clone. One of the things about my iPad workflow is I'm just syncing with cloud storage. And text files on my Mac are in BBEdit, and I can open those text files in anything that opens text files. I just want a certain set of features when I'm writing on my iPad. And it's frustrating that nothing I found hits all of them, although a bunch of them are close. And when I find one that's good, I stick with it for a while. And what's happened is those apps have tended to be abandoned, which gets back to that thing I wrote about the mortality of software, which I linked to a new piece that somebody wrote about that the other day about the lifetime of software. But editorial basically got abandoned, and I switched to One Writer, which isn't abandoned per se, but the One Writer author Slack. Has a very popular, hotter, more... He's more focused on this other app that he does. Mm. And so One Writer doesn't get a lot of love, and it's got some bugs and it's got some limitations that seem to just, I despair of them ever being fixed. And that has made me once again sort of say, okay, I need to not just focus on this. I need to look at the field again and see if there's something else right out there. And it's fascinating to do that. It's fun that there are so many options, but also it's just frustrating that there's no, there's none that fits perfectly, so I end up having to pick and choose what features matter the most to me.
Yeah, it's interesting too to watch the evolution of that on the iPad OS, iOS side as opposed to Mac OS, right? Where, like, there's a lot of stuff that dates back so far that it kind of the features you're trying to mimic are features that have been long running over there. Like you mentioned, BBEdit, and obviously it's like text editors, right? And I think to a certain degree when it comes to iOS. You know, there's a lot of trying to improve things, and it's like with text editors, sometimes that doesn't, sometimes you overcomplicate it, right? Like, and I understand why, because you want to stand out. You want to do stuff that's interesting. You want to do stuff that hasn't been done before. And at the root, a text editor doesn't sound like a super exciting product.
Right. I mean, and one of the interesting things about text editors is, right, you get a lot of it for free. And I don't want to make light of the fact that these people have worked on these apps, but there is I have seen a lot of Markdown text editors on iPad, and a lot of them are just super generic, because you can get to that point, I think, without too much trouble compared to doing something that's like a much bigger, more thought out product, like Drafts and Ulysses and things like that. But what does strike me is that you end up with these kind of two extremes, which is you end up with these super ambitious things that may burn out their developers, for all I know, because I've gone through two of them now and I'm maybe on to a third. And then you've got the ones that are super limited. And it's like an aesthetic of we're not going to do too much. We're going to keep it super simple.
Minimalist. Yeah.
And actually, I think leaving Drafts aside, because like I said, I think Drafts does literally everything I want except syncing the files with Dropbox or iCloud Drive, because Drafts has its own little thing that all its files live in. There are two interesting examples of these extremes. One is this app called Tayo, which is brand new, and it's essentially under development. It's not done. I mean, they're not going to call it a beta. I guess it's been around for a year, but like they're starting to charge for it only now, and you can tell that it's new because it's not all there yet. Like, you see these decisions they made, and you're like, well, that's great, but why is this not there? And the answer is they were too busy working on A to work on B, and so they built this macro system that is like they've literally rebuilt shortcuts inside of their app for scripting their app. So many text editors on iOS are like, write a JavaScript, write a Python script, use shortcuts. And Tayo is like, we built our own shortcuts inside Tayo that lets you do all of these things. So you just build your own macros. You don't have to write code. You just use shortcuts like approach and you can get everything you want. And it's pretty amazing. Like, I can't believe they built it. I'm going to write a separate thing about this because it's unbelievable what they've built. It's so wild that they built this whole thing. So I build, but they don't have the ability to link, like, to make a markdown link if you've got a URL on a clipboard and you want to make a hyperlink, which is like table stakes for a markdown editor. They just don't have that feature. It's like, why? And the answer is they built this whole thing, but they didn't add a bunch of basic features. And I've seen this before on iOS. There was once, I think they finally did change it, but there was at one point a text editor that didn't have search and replace. And they said, oh, but you can download a search and replace macro from our macro collection. And it's like, no, you need to put search and replace in your app. That's crazy. Don't do that. So with Tayo, not only do they not have markdown link, which is like, what are you doing? But when I was able to make with their wild, brilliant shortcut style interface, I was able to make a macro that does that. And then I was like, okay, now how do I assign a keyboard shortcut to it? And the answer is, nope, can't do that either. It's like, what? You had this incredible macro thing, and I'm writing on the keyboard, and then I want to launch a macro, and the only way to do it literally is to reach up and tap the screen and then tap a thing, and then it happens. It's like, what are you? And the answer is, they have a huge amount of motivation to do interesting things, and they're only just getting started. The other side of it is IA Writer, which several people recommended to me after I wrote about it. And honestly, in investigating IA Writer, what I realized is that IA Writer is actually way closer to what I want than I realized. Mm-hmm. And it's changed over the years. I haven't looked at it in a while. I bought it. I have it. But IA Writer is interesting because its whole aesthetic is minimalism.
Right.
So it's not flashy, and it doesn't have a macro language or anything like that, although I think you can get out to shortcuts. And it's got a URL, it's got like the old style, like URL based scripting thing. So you can send it a URL and do some basic control kind of stuff. And it might be enough for my purposes, but like that's its challenge, is that it's so simple and minimal that some of the things I want to do, I may not be able to do. And since there's no real way to extend it, if it doesn't do it, I'm out of luck. So I don't know. It's fascinating to see this. And it's kind of fun because, again, I picked a text editor for the Mac like 20 years ago, and it does way more than I ever use it for. It's like Logic. It's one of those things that I use 4% of the features of. But those 4% of the features are all fantastic. And I go to another text editor and I'm like, why?
The problem is that everyone's 4% is often a little different.
Yeah. That's the beauty of it, I suppose.
Yep. If you're willing to build all 3,000% of that product, that's great. But no one has the time or energy or resources to do that, I think.
It was useful. Writing this article is useful, too, because it got me to actually write down, like, what is it? I say, this one's not working for me. It's like, what exactly is it? And so in that article, you can see it. You can read it. I kind of enumerate, like, this is actually the stuff that I care about. Like, I care about seeing all my markdown code, and you know, syntax coloring and styling is nice, and you know, you got an HTML preview and file sync with Dropbox or iCloud. I use Dropbox, but I would move to iCloud if that was the solution. It doesn't really matter. I just want to sync with my Mac. And, you know, some scriptability is good. Keyboard shortcuts, search and replace, all of this stuff that's pretty straightforward. But the other thing that I did is think about, like, what do I consider the text utility features, which I've written about before, that BBEdit has in it that are actually the ones, like, I really would like any text editor I use to have. And it's a small number, but it's like pattern match, search and replace. I want to be able to sort lines and process duplicates and process lines matching a pattern and changing case. And you can do that with macros. You can do that with scripts. There are other ways to do it. But like, I'm not actually asking for enormous set of features, but there are these features that I use all the time. So I don't know. It was useful at least to ponder my own, like, my own needs and what I'm actually looking for.
It's the trick of software too, right? Like we were just talking about with the 4%. Like it's unlikely someone designs the text editor, which is like just the things you want and nothing else, right? Like That would be weird. It would be like somebody custom building it for you, which would be unlikely.
Which already it already happened for me for podcast editing. So, because that's literally how Fairwrite came to be. Is the guy asked me what I wanted in an iPad tech podcast editor, and like 6 months later he had one. I was like, oh my god, this does everything I want. And I was like, well, yeah, that's because I sent you that email. So it's not going to happen again.
Yeah, bespoke apps are great, but bespoke apps are kind of rare.
It's
need somebody who chooses the stuff you want is a subset of all the features they're putting
in.
And that is, you know, a function to a certain degree of what you've used with BB Edit. And so I think the answer is we convince Rich to do it for the iPad.
Well, I mean, there's not going to be a BB Edit for iPad. No, but this is so the brilliance of having a macro language is
sensibility.
You could build this stuff, right? Like, I could, if there's not a process duplicates, somebody could write a process duplicates.
Right. You script. Or someone else could build it and you could use it. That is the nice thing. And so, yes, finding the sweet spot for what's the stuff I need there to be built in and what's the stuff that's okay if it's a macro or an extension.
You know, it's funny, so what got me upset with OneWriter is that it's bugs. It's iOS bugs with the latest version of iOS where I will sometimes click and the cursor will go to the wrong place, or the cursor will go to the bottom of the document, or I use the arrow keys and they go to the wrong place because it's got some bugs that didn't used to be there where it loses track of the insertion point and it's bad. It's frustrating. But what sent me over the edge, it's such a dumb thing, and there's a screenshot in my article about it. What sent me over the edge is a little user interface nicety that was the making a link, right? They have a command K to make a hyperlink. I've got a URL on the clipboard. I've just copied from Safari. I'm going to select some text that I want this to be a hyperlink. I do Command K. And here's what it doesn't do, and it should do, which is look at the clipboard and say, oh, that's a URL. I know what this person wants to do. Boom. Instead, I do Command K, and it brings up a modal dialog box that says, enter link, the name of the URL that's on the clipboard in parentheses, file link or file transclusion, and cancel. And I appreciate that this app has lots of different things you can do with links. But first off, I really want to be able to say, if there's a URL on the clipboard, you know what I want to do. And the other frustration, it's a modal dialog that cannot be navigated with the keyboard. So even though there's a Command K keyboard shortcut to make a link, I can't actually use the keyboard to make the link. I have to tap the screen or move the cursor on the Magic Keyboard, move the cursor up there and click on the link, at which point I might as well just type it myself. So that was the thing that I was like, oh boy, I gotta break up with this app. I can't go on like this. This is ridiculous. And that was the moment where I actually, and behind the scenes, that's the moment where I sent a text message to John Voorhees and Federico Vittici and said, you guys got any good new hot young markdown text editors? Because OneWriter is killing me. And they're like, have you looked at Tayo? And I'm like, oh no. And now I'm looking at Tayo and back at Drafts and at IA Writer, because there's no...
Might as well run the gamut there.
The other behind the scenes thing is that I made a table. It's a markdown table, and that's the first one of those I think that we've done on the site. So there's a table. I had to make a new style in the CSS. I don't know how it will render in the newsletter, so I actually marked it to just not show that part of the article in the newsletter, and you can click to read it in your web browser, because I'm a little concerned about how that is going to come across in the newsletter. But I did it. I made a chart, and rather than making an image, because I wanted it to be accessible, I wanted people who can't see images to be able to parse that in some way if they wanted to. So I just wanted to use text. That's my story. What's going on with you?
Well, I had my adventure in, as I alluded to, text message spam, which was my head banging moment of the week. And just, it's still going kind of on and off. And I've had some good feedback from people on Twitter and people in Slack and stuff for suggestions of other ways to combat that. But I think it all does wrap back around to my question of why doesn't Apple have better tools for this? And there's some stuff. I mean, the problem, I think, fundamentally comes down to the fact that Messages is an app that does two things that are kind of similar but also different, which are SMS and iMessage. And iMessage is great, right? Because Apple's got full control over that. So it lets you do a lot of stuff, including you can report spam directly in iMessage. But if spam is coming from an SMS source, which I think is probably more common, you're kind of out of luck. And in my case, the problem was that I ended up on these threads, like they would spam 20 different numbers with the same link. And then not only would I have that spam, which is like, fine, all right, I could block just that content, that person. But everybody would start replying like it was like one of those like email blasts sent to too many people, and everyone starts replying, and then people are like, stop replying. And you're like, ah, so all of a sudden I've got messages from like 20 different numbers. And I have this huge list of, like, you know, I open messages, and it's like, why are there like seven different garbage threads in my messages? My messages are sacrosanct, right? Like, that's a place that it's like, I want to text people I know. So I played around a little bit with some options. There are some apps that do add filters. So Apple has this ability to, like, let you filter between known and unknown senders in text messages in iOS. Not in macOS, only in iOS. And you can turn it on, and it lets you like have sort of a top level filter, which is fine, but doesn't, then you have to go to another step to block, like, do I want notifications from unknown senders? And at that point it's like, well, I get legit stuff from unknown numbers because I'm dealing with a bunch of contractors and other stuff right now. So I can't just be like, I don't want to get notifications. But there's no tools built in. It feels very like Wild West. And it's like, Apple, you've spent all this time building email spam tools. Let's have some of that goodness over here. Let's use some of that funky machine learning and start figuring out. Somebody pointed out a lot of these spam, as I think it was actually in my case, come from email addresses, because there's this weird sort of gateway thing where you can send email to somebody and it shows up as a text. Like a lot of carriers provide that as a quote-unquote feature, and that if you call the carrier and sort of whisper some arcane numbers, you can convince them to turn that ability off for your number, basically. Mm. Like, you will not get stuff sent from an email. But it's like, if I can do that, but like, I have to go through this. Some of the apps I had people recommend, things, you know, like RoboKiller and Nomo Robo, which are like, you know, deal predominantly, I think, with phone spam, but also do text filtering to a certain extent.
Yeah, they say,
which is fine. Mm. Yeah, I have heard mixed results. I know people who swear by them, but it's also a paid feature, which is like, all right, fine. Like, I'm not against paying people for the service if they do it well, but why isn't there at least a base level of functionality? And that led me to a whole separate thing with macOS version of messages, which, you know, is now a Catalyst app.
Yeah.
And I decided is terrible. Like, I had not run into this being a problem, but like all of a sudden I started realizing all these things I want to do are just incredibly hard, if not impossible. Like, there's no multiple select of conversations. You can't shift select a bunch of threads and delete them.
Mm.
Doesn't work. There's no default keyboard shortcut for deleting a thread. And the keyboard shortcut system in macOS will not let you assign command delete as a keyboard shortcut. Great. And moreover, when I was like, all right, fine, do something else. Command backslash or something. You know, it's near delete. And then I went there. It's like, all right, command backslash. It's like, I'll delete this thread. You aware of we're going to delete it on all your devices? And I go to hit return. And it's like, it doesn't even use return. I can't hit return to hit delete in the dialog that pops up. I have to click it. And it's like, this is really, now you've like made, you're wasting my time. You're wasting my time. You have made this very difficult for me to do. But the kicker was when I was like, all right, can I block something? And in order to block something on the Mac version of messages, has to be in your contacts, which is bananas.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I'm not going to, like, and I see the people who are like, oh, I just add all the stuff to one contact sheet. It's
spammer.
Like, I get it, but that's dumb.
Yeah.
Why is it that way, Apple? I mean, and so it did get me back to that. I've been okay with a lot of the Catalyst apps, but it is one of those moments where you're like, this is not a Mac app. It does not feel like a Mac app. It does not do the basic things that every Mac app kind of has built in. And that's really irritating. Things like multiple selects and keyboard shortcuts and all of that should just be there. That's something that, you know, even if it takes a little extra work to implement that, Apple, this is your app and this is your framework. Go the extra mile. Because, man, it's bad. It's very bad. So, yeah, that was a lot of fun. I did enjoy the one moment which I posted on Twitter of somebody trying to stop this madness by texting, like, hey, you know, you should stop replying to everything because that will stop it. By the way, my name's Chris. I'm from Boston. I like coffee. You know, it's like, oh, I appreciate you, Chris. You're trying your damnedest to make this work and make the best of a bad situation. But it is just annoying and frustrating. And I have to imagine this problem is only going to get worse since so many of us have shifted to text messages. And it also made me very sympathetic to people who are not savvy, you know, about tech stuff and, you know, are getting junky links and stuff and just have no idea how to stop it, right? Like going, in a lot of cases, saying install this app to remove your text spam is not a good experience. I heard you and Mike talking about antivirus stuff on Upgrade this week.
Right.
And same sort of thing. It's like, I don't want to tell people go install this thing that may or may not solve your problems, may cause unintentional problems along with that, such as filtering out good text messages or text messages you needed to get. I had people talking about, like, including me, I get municipal messages from my city with, like, COVID updates or, you know, street cleaning or snow plows, whatever. They, like, text you to let you know. It's like, I don't want to accidentally filter those out because that is useful. So what's the deal here? Like, how can we figure out a way to make this problem better? Because it feels very untenable. And it's like, I don't get that much spam via email anymore. Like, mostly it gets filtered. It's not 100%, but it's way better than it was a decade ago. So
sure.
Yeah, I don't know. It baffles me a little bit that Apple doesn't have better. Their solution was, let the third party handle it.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, I guess.
That's my Macworld column, basically I took your complaints about spam and I took Gruber's complaints about email tracking, yeah. Which, you know, it may be intractable because, you know, emails go out one per person and it's not just a tracking pixel, right? Like every single image can be used for tracking. And so if you've got images in your thing, they're probably, you know, they're trackable, right? Like there's right. Kind of nothing you can do.
Anything that's loading remotely.
But I was using those and I wrapped in my old Apple should do a VPN thing just to say again, I don't know what the details are. But it feels to me like there's an opportunity here for Apple to make a privacy service that includes, I know we've talked about this before, but includes a VPN. Mm-hmm. That's baked in that, like, you, it's in the OS. It's the tightest integration possible. If you're on their privacy system, they're using their VPN and you're completely locked down and nobody knows who you are. And it's proxying stuff. And, you know, there is this, opportunity for them to basically go beyond what they're already doing.
Yeah.
And say, because, I mean, you mentioned No More Robo and stuff like that. It's like, okay, I appreciate the fact that they built these APIs and they're like, we don't want to be in this business. We're going to let a bunch of apps sort of solve some of this, right? And I appreciate that, but I kind of feel like, why doesn't Apple do it? Why doesn't Apple say, you know, you pay us $5 a month or whatever, and you get a VPN and you get that you can trust because it's from us. Because as I heard from all the people who complained about me saying, I'm not sure why the Apple TV exists. It's like, well, yeah, but it's from Apple and I trust Apple. It's like, all right, well, you're going to trust Apple as a VPN provider more than any other VPN provider, right? Because the bottom line is that the VPN provider still sees all your data if they want to. And so you have to trust them. So Apple could do that, throw in their system level fed by their own, you know, by the data from all their users, spam blocking. Spam blocking, by the way, spam blocking in mail on iOS. Spam blocking for voicemails, spam blocking for texts, just like throw all that in there. And I don't know what else you want to put in there. Can they do more intelligent proxying of things like images? I don't know.
The thing I wanted for years is, and I'm surprised they haven't done some version of, is at least creating some version of encrypted email. Where like, even if I'm just sending, say, from one iCloud account to somebody else on iCloud, like on via iMessage, right? And say like, yeah, that's encrypted. Like it's encrypted in transit, but it's also encrypted. It's like, I mean, you can get plugins that do, you know, GPG and stuff like that, but like, you know, why not? I mean, why not provide or at least push a way to do some better encryption of email stuff and just have it transparent, and, right? And like,
I don't want to end up being, I mean, it's so easy to say, well, Apple should do this and Apple should do everything. And I'm reminded of the fact that Apple actually tries a lot of things that they don't try very hard and are bad at and ends up being a bad product. But I'm just saying, if you're going to be a services company and motivated by services revenue, maybe there's an opportunity to take your privacy commitment and turn it into an actual privacy service and security service that you can make money at to enhance what your users are even more. The counter argument is this. The counter argument is, first off, fundamental stuff they should just do and you shouldn't have to pay for it. And and also that Apple's never going to build hay. They're never going to build a true high quality VPN, like the leader in VPN technology, right? Like that they're not going to do a good job. And it's like, I could see that argument that it's never going to be the core of their business. And so why should they do it? At the same time, the counter argument is Apple is really hot for services growth. And this strikes me as being a place where they have some knowledge in the category, at least generally, and they have some power as the platform owner, and they could drive privacy.
I will say my one counter argument there is the idea of commoditizing the privacy. It's like you earn your privacy, but only if you pay for it.
Yeah,
does
I know.
It's uncomfortable, right? That's where it goes back to the idea of like Apple should do at least some of these things because
It makes itself out there.
Yeah. And it's also put itself out there. It's put its money down on like, we are the private. I just saw that commercial repeatedly last week where it's like the people shouting their personal information, the iPhone commercial. It's like, that's a great commercial, but you gotta keep walking and there is a lot more walk.
There's the challenge there, because some stuff, it's got to be a service. Like a VPN, it's got to be a service. There's like huge costs in doing something like that. You really need to make that a service. But there's some things that are fundamental. And I know it also opens you up to criticism that you're basically making your product degraded unless people pay. I will give you an example from real life, which is wireless carriers will let you pay them to block spam calls.
Yep.
Because they have the technology to block spam calls, but they're not going to give it to you unless you give them money. And that always bothered me, because like, isn't that a fundamental? You have the ability to do this, and it's a fundamental part of your product. People are breaking your product to do spam calls. Why don't you block spam calls? And the answer is, well, only if you pay us.
Yeah, I mean, that's outrageous in some ways too, because you see like the things like the Do Not Call registry pop up, and it's like they're trying to make an end run around something that's possible for these companies to do. It just feels crappy. It does. It feels like something where it's like, why is this the thing that you're going to make money on? And the answer is because people want it and will pay for it. But it's just, very frustrating. Anyways, dealing with the fallout from that all week has just spiraled into a bunch of different things of realizing the Messages app was kind of crappy on macOS and there's these tools don't exist, and it tied in, like I said, to the carriers, where it's like sometimes you can get the carriers to do some of this work for you, but you gotta sort of bug them or pay for it. And it's just, it was a reminder of the problems with the technology that we all run into.
But anyway, I feel like there could be something there for Apple, but whether they'll go there, I don't know. It struck me as another place for there to be a service. But I think you're right that the other part of it is they also have to just do better. They just have to do better. Like, it should not be, honestly, like Apple should be making an effort to block spam texts and spam calls and spam emails on iPhones. And it makes no effort to do any of those things.
Yeah. It basically threw up its hands and said that's a problem for third party.
They make the third party API available and provide a fundamental level in the operating system, right? Like, this is what we're going to do. And if you want more features, you can go to the third parties. But they've completely abdicated responsibility for it. And the text message spam, I get those all the time now. And I tried the spam call blockers for text, who claim they work with text messages, and it just doesn't work for me. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, I tried one called like SMS Smart Filter Sling, and it adds additional filters to that known unknown sender screen, but it so far has caught zero
yeah.
of the things that I've tried to catch. So that isn't really working. And a part of me wonders, is it because it's a group text? Is it because it's SMS? Like, who knows? I will say, as sort of a link into the privacy angle and as some follow-up, a piece Ooh. That I, something I just wrote a link post to right before we recorded.
Follow-up.
Was we talked a while back about the purported AirTag stuff and what stops you from tracking somebody by like slipping in a you know tracking fob into their backpack or whatever. And there's a beta feature that Benjamin Mayo over at 9to5 Mac noticed in the latest 14.5 release that essentially alerts you if the Find My app catches a device moving with you that is not registered to your Apple ID, which I thought was a very clever solution. So if somebody else, you know, if you decide you need to keep tabs on me, I understand. I get around.
Uh-huh.
It will notice that I have a, you know, something on my person that is not registered to my Apple ID, and it will tell me on my phone, hey, there's something moving with you that is not yours. Which I thought, you know, again, it's a clever way to deal with that problem of how do you prevent somebody else from tracking you physically with one of these supposed devices that, again, may or may not be coming soon. Who knows? But it shows that, you know, they have to think about these things, right? This is, goes back to the privacy angle of they have to take into consideration what are all the ways that people can misuse this great technology that we're building and what rises to the level of we should do something about this. And it's great that they thought about this in this situation where it's like, you know, this could be a matter of somebody's, you know, physical security. And certainly of their mental well-being, feeling like they're being tracked by somebody. But spam doesn't make it to that level. So that's where it draws the line, I guess. But I feel like that line should be somewhere else.
I don't know. Strange. Yeah, at the very least, it should be better UI, right? Bottom line, if I get a spam message, I should be able to sort of like do one tap or swipe or tap and hold and banish it forever. And it's way too complicated.
Blocking a thing on iOS is like three or four taps. And it is annoying if you have to do it multiple times. I think, yeah, it's glad there's blocking in there whatsoever, but it really is a cumbersome process to do it.
Yeah. All right. Well, nobody block us. Because we're a podcast. You asked for this. You paid for this. Oh, boy.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, don't remind him. We'll be back next week again. Maybe. There'll be some Apple news. I doubt it. There were rumors of Apple news, but I'm skeptical. That's fine.
Always good to stay skeptical.
All right. We will talk to y'all next week. But until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.